Okay, we're gonna continue on with Dion Fortune. The first manifestation is the next chapter we'll look into. But first, I'm wearing red today because if we all take a look at our astrology chart, Aries has been very active. It's been very obvious and talked about by a lot of astrologists. Mars is currently in Aries for everyone. Mars transit. Okay, so if we can find our natal Mars, take notice of the relationship. I have a quincunx with my Jupiter and Mars right now. Mars is all about taking action, right? The masculine principle. To a degree where we want to get things done. With it being in Aries, there's going to be sudden burst of this action that we can take advantage of. Life is flowing through us, and the Mars emanations are reflecting off of us, providing this life force. Okay, we can identify the relationships because with Mars and Aries, the I am, a lot can get done for the next 2 or 3 weeks, so take advantage of it. I've been sort of scattered with Jacob Boehme and Cosmic Doctrine. I've also revisited a lot of the Ageless Wisdom and some of these works along with some channeling. And here's the thing, when we actually begin settling our mind and listening to our thoughts, and as Dion Fortune talked about with the thought forms or the teachers that we're working through Dion Fortune, when we use our thought forms and actually focus on them, then that thought transference will occur. And that way, the life that is flowing through us becomes very obvious. Now, we call it many things. We can call the inner voice intuition, and we can even identify the outward appearances and reflections as others, but really it's us talking to ourselves. Okay. Last night, one of the last things that I mentioned to myself, which I learned through Viwamas and his channelings, were life supports us and we support life. Once we have that thought form and we blast it out there and shine light on it, in the mental realm, we have that energy within our aura, our atmosphere that we carry around. We will be supportive. We will be supported, and we will be supportive with life. And humanity serves humanity. I've said that for many years. So that's why when we judge others, we really shouldn't judge because to a degree we're all supporting each other. We just may not be able to see it. Okay. But going back to astrology, Saturn, Mars, Mercury, all in Aries, Neptune, even my Pallas Athena right here, which was in Pisces. This Pallas Athena transit, which is in Aries for everyone right now. My natal Athena, eighth house, very strong placement. And this is why I'm in occultism to such a, and it, as soon as I made the choice to shift my perception to studying and remembering and learning about occultism and the unknown. This placement, which took place probably around age 35, with a secondary compression around age 35, 36, 37. That's about the time I got sober from alcohol, and I created a spiritual foundation, which now 10 years later, 10 going on 11 years, Athena, she is the inner strategist. She is the aspect of us that is the creative intelligence and provides the wisdom. This is a very strong feminine placement, so I encourage everyone to find their Athena placement in their chart. Mine's in the eighth house. This means my perception's highly psychic and creative, especially being in conjunction with natal Venus, natal Moon. Very strong imagination, very active. In fact, a lot of times I may dismiss coincidences or synchronicities, but either way, I'm really aware on another level, and I have learned to perceive through more of osmosis. So absorbing my environment. That's where it was very difficult as a child, especially being a Cancer ascendant, right? Right here. Oops. Cancer ascendant. I do have a Pluto decanet. That kind of helped a little bit with me not being such a crybaby. But when I was building my emotional body, that was very difficult. But this was, of course, by pre-birth intent. I have designed the vibration that I carried into this lifetime to experience this emotional authority on a broader, I had the bandwidth to explore the emotional body with a strong mental body placement also in this third house with the three planets. And that way I would come into this lifetime to create experiences to feel. Okay. I'm very sensitive, very compassionate towards more on what I see on the outside than I am with myself, because I can be very, I mean, I joined the Marine Corps, so I can be very rigid when it comes to my own personal motives and my own personal affairs. So, all right, that's enough of astrology, but I do encourage everyone to take advantage of Mars being in Aries for another 3 weeks or so, 4 weeks. But let's get into Dion Fortune. Share my screen. Hang on. There we go. All right. The first manifestation. Knowledge falls into two divisions, the record of facts and the explanation thereof. Knowledge can only consist of that which is present in the mind. That which does not enter the mind cannot be known. Therefore, you can only know that which you have senses to interpret to you. As new senses open up, more planes of existence can be known. There is, however, a limit on the knowledge of the finite. Perception ceases at the barrier of manifestation. Of that which lies beyond, we can only know by analogy. All right, so going beyond the senses, stepping into the unknown. We can train our mind and learn concepts for our consciousness through analogy. This is what the teacher is elaborating on. All right, the unmanifest is pure existence. We cannot say of it that it is not. Although it is not manifest, it is. It is the source from which all arises. It is the only reality. It only is substance. It alone is stable. All else is an appearance and a becoming. Of this unmanifest, we can only say it is. It is the verb to be, turned back upon itself. It is a state of pure being without qualities and without history. All we can say of it is that it is not anything that we know. For if we know anything, it must be in manifestation for us to know it. And if it is in manifestation, it is not unmanifest. Therefore, the very fact that we can know it proves that it is not unmanifest. The unmanifest is the great negation. At the same time, it is the infinite potentiality, which has not occurred. It is best conceived of under the image of interstellar space. All right. So the unmanifest, which has always been, always is, interstellar space without stars, without planets, without any movement, without any light, without any manifestations. Okay. And out of that, we're going to learn through this reading how manifestation came about. In the occult teachings, you have been given certain images under which you are instructed to think of certain things. These things are not descriptive, but symbolic, and are designed to train the mind, not inform it. Therefore, you may think of the unmanifest as interstellar space and of the Logos as a sun surrounded by his solar system of planets. All right, so we have our solar Logos, and we have our planets within the solar system. And we can conceive this image. If not, we can just Google a video of it. The planets and the emanations of the Logos as rays. So there's seven rays, which will be talked about. And now we have symbols represented by planets that can represent the seven rays, the seven planets. Now we're not considering Earth and Pluto, Neptune, Uranus. Well, maybe we can. I don't. The idea is, let's seven planets, seven rays, the sun in the center of the solar system. And then we have our solar logos. The unmanifest is the only unity. Manifestation begins when duality occurs. The prime duality is space and movement. Prime duality. So even though there's oneness, which is the unmanifest, we all arise from the oneness, from the void. From the cosmos as manifestations within the unmanifest. Prime duality, which is an excellent label For when we say duality doesn't exist, we can just say there's prime duality, which is space and movement. All right. So space and movement. The first manifestation was a current in space. The metaphor I must use may convey nothing to your mind. All I can say is that the space was moving. You will find these clues are a clue to much. This is why I recommend the Right Use of Will book series, all 8 books. The entire creation process was personified with the four-body God system, or the four parts of God: spirit, will, heart, and father of manifestation, which would be body. Spirit, will, heart, body. Okay? And that actually created a theatrical representation within my mind of creation, where what we are exploring with the cosmic doctrine is more metaphor and symbols. In the Right Use of Will, the works of the Right Use of Will trigger and create movement within ourself, which is much needed within the will. We have a lot of stuck energy, stuck points, or points that are not moving that will move, and that will allow us to create space, okay, part of prime duality from the movement. And that's what we ultimately want to do if we want to become more receptive, because we have non-receptive qualities within our emotional body that need to be poked at. All right. We have the opportunity every day through the reflective process as we interact with each other within humanity. A lot of us are catalyzing each other based off subconscious responses and don't realize that we're working together, but on a conscious level, it's more like creating enemies and we hate each other. What? And it's just to give the idea, because we're touching these points in our emotional body and attempting to experience this space and movement around these energetic points that need to be to that are dormant in a sense and just hiding in the shadows. We call it shadow work. It has many names. The first manifestation was a current in space. Already read that. Now, when space moves, it has this peculiar quality, being frictionless. It never loses momentum and continues to flow. When space moves, two forces are at work. The force which causes it to move, being the desire of space for momentum. The force which had hitherto caused it not to move, being the desire of space for inertia. Okay. We have a resting state. And we also have the movement. These two factors are present in all motion, but the desire for movement, being the stronger, overcomes the desire for inertia. And the desire for inertia continues as a check upon the movement. Therefore, the movement is pulled upon slightly. That is why there is no such thing as a straight line in the cosmos. All movement, therefore, has a slight curve in its projection. Therefore, eventually, it returns to the spot whence it started and forms a spinning ring. let's go back up where the teacher talked about the first manifestation was a current in space, right? And how that initial movement began is unknown, or the teacher doesn't elaborate on how or give his opinion how it's we our consciousness stops at that mental image of the bump which happened within the unmanifest and started a movement, like in the image that we see by Dion Fortune, as she was describing it. Okay, I remade the image in Adobe, cleaned it up a little bit. So there was a little bump, and then that movement, not a straight line, went all the way around and returned to its point of origin, which probably took a long, what we would consider time. Either way, it did not stop moving. We can see examples with ripples on water, but eventually the water does come to a rest, which also the cosmos, the unmanifest, will also come to a rest eventually, like a smooth pond with no movement or activity. All right. So now the prime movement is just flowing of space that returns after long eons once it started and then renews its journey. This sets up a spinning belt of enormous circumference. This belt spins on one plane for immense eons of time, spins with a changeless spinning, but its tendency is to communicate its motion to the space about it, which leads more space to flow into the spinning. All this, remember, is metaphor. The spinning in one plane continues until the stresses which it generates evokes a new movement, and a second current in space is set up at right angles to the first. All right, so even these little arrows right here are right angles. Okay. Now, the spinning is occurring, happening for eons, building up momentum. Sets up a spinning belt of enormous circumference to communicate its motion to the space about it. All right, so we have parameter. There is communication with itself. And the prime movement is what we can consider the beginning of our cosmos. Okay, so set up right angles, and the same process is repeated. The spinning planes of force may be conceived of a resembling the rings of Saturn. All right, so the right angles, here's the prime movement, and from the initial bump, which created the movement and then returned all the way back to the beginning, created another movement off the right angle, which caused another ring to be created. All right. We have now two spinning planes, which at two points cut each other. And it is worthy of note that the second plane forms outside the first, and is therefore larger in diameter. For countless eons, these planes spin at right angles to each other, and the whole of evolution turns upon the difference in size between the planes. When the larger has got up to the same speed at the smaller and older, it commences to attract one aspect of it. The consequence being that the older circle is drawn towards the newer. The older circle is attracted to the newer. Ring cosmos is the older circle. Ring chaos is the newer circle. All right. Now, the first circle must be conceived of as having an upper and low and a lower surface. The upper surface of the outflowing arc may be conceived of as positive and the lower as negative. The reverse being the cause, excuse me, the reverse being the case in the inflowing arc. Likewise, with the second circle to arise. So now we have sort of this, what we would call a cosmic egg, even though the images aren't oval, it's more of a 360 degree circle. But with all this movement going on within the limits of the cosmos, right? Now we have what could be considered positive and positive cosmos, negative chaos. These circles are mutually attracting and repelling each other, so that you can see the upper surface of the outflowing arc of the first circle being positive, rising up towards its corresponding aspect in the second circle, and the lower circle in the returning arc pressing downwards, so that you get a second movement imparted to the spinning disc. When this secondary movement has completed the first circuit and set up its steady revolution, the new cosmos is in being. That is the prime beginning of a cosmos, expressed in the nearest approximate metaphor. All the parameters are in place now. Okay. Let's keep reading. Now we'll learn about the ring pass knot. The secondary spin of the first circuit is the ring pass knot, and the circuit of the second formation is that sphere which sets a bound to cosmos. All right. So the ring pass knot is going to be sort of like a, just think of a round swimming pool, and the when there's ripples in the water that go towards the wall, the ripples will bounce off the wall and move back towards the origin point of where the initial movement created the ripples. Okay. These are clues that we can see in nature that are hidden in plain sight of how our cosmos was created. The secondary spin of the first circuit is the ring pass knot, and the circuit of the second formation is that sphere which sets a bound to chaos. On the outer sphere, there is a secondary derivation. And though a spinning circle of motion represents for that cosmos the prime stillness, the immobility in which it is rooted, it is the thrust block of the force of the cosmos, that which resists, which alone enables momentum. The importance here is to hear these words that are being used: prying stillness, spinning circle of motion, thrust block of the force of the cosmos. And this means that the positive needs the negative needs the positive. One cannot survive without the other. Now they each have their role in order for this cosmos to be of being. New cosmos is in being, the prime beginning. Okay, we need the positive, we need the prime duality. We need the prime duality for the prime beginning of the cosmos. All right. So the momentum to be achieved, and you may call it the ring chaos, the prime evil. It is evolved from the reaction of the prime force in order to take its thrust. It spins at right angles to the prime spin. It counteracts it. It was the attraction of the ring chaos, including a secondary spin in the ring cosmos, which forms the ring pass knot. Now, that movement in the ring cosmos, spinning in one plane and rotating while it spins as if upon an axis, sets the bounds beyond which the creatures of that universe cannot pass, even in thought. But this universe is a sphere encircled by two lines of force. Ring, the ring cosmos, and the ring chaos. We have a mental concept now of how our cosmos works with just the ring cosmos, ring chaos, ring pass knot. The momentum of the ring cosmos is the source of force from which evolution draws its momentum. And the rotation of the ring chaos is the source of force from which dissolution draws its power. All right. So, ring cosmos, evolution, thrust, moving forward. The thrust is off of the prime duality of prime negative duality, which is the ring chaos, which is sort of like a vacuum. Okay, it's pulling back where the ring chaos is wanting to use the ring chaos. I mean, the ring cosmos is wanting to use the ring chaos as a platform to thrust off of. Go in two different directions. Evolution is a thrust from the surface towards the center. Devolution or dissolution is a suction into outer space. The ring chaos does not belong to the universe it encircles, but to outer space. That is an important point in connection with it. All right, so ring cosmos is evolution, creating life, creating the stars, creating the planets, creating us, creating life, whereas the ring chaos, not so much. So this is a prime evil. Okay, but it provides that vacuum in order for life to thrive, or else there would be stillness. Ring cosmos has its desires turned towards the sphere it encircles. The ring chaos has its desires turned toward the space that it encircles. One, they're both looking in different directions here. The ring cosmos seeks to extend the center. The ring chaos seeks to expand the circumference. Okay. Now, with the ring pass knot, the ring chaos can only go so far when it's attempting to expand the circumference. And this is an interesting thought if realized, because we'll learn why in the next few pages. The ring cosmos is seeking to extend the center. So we have, let's just visualize the astrological symbol for our sun. So circle with a dot in the middle. Now, if we extend that dot within the circle and it keeps growing until it fills the circle, we just have a black circle. Okay. If, right. That's the goal of the ring cosmos, is to extend the center. So if, we could even say we can visualize our cosmos with the desire to fill the cosmos with light within the darkness. Let's say the ring cosmos tends to solidify by contraction as the vacuum. The ring chaos to return to the unmanifest, which it arose, and therefore, if its influence were unchecked, to reduce the universe it encircles to nothingness. So the ring chaos has a focus of returning to nothingness, unmanifest. The ring cosmos, if its influence were unchecked, would be static in the immediate present. So there'd be no movement. These two influences are the source of all the force in the cosmos. The ring cosmos, because it concretes, builds up. The ring chaos, because it diffuses, never grows. Now, these two rings we will call good and evil, life and death, light and darkness, spirit and matter, being and not being, God and devil, because each of these potencies has its root in the respective ring. But let it be clearly conceived that the ring good and the ring evil are not good and evil as you understand them, but merely spinning circles of force at right angles to each other, and therefore in opposition. And it is merely the angle of the first to arise, which is called good. And the angle in opposition to the prime plane is called evil. And it might well be that in another cosmos, the first plane would begin to spin at another angle, the angle of your evil. It would still be good to its cosmos, because good and evil do not depend upon any plane or angle, but are simply relative to each other. The first force to arise is called good, because from it arises the line of force called evolution. All subsequent secondary forces are measured by the standard. All subsequent secondary forces are measured by that standard. Insofar as they move in the same angle, they are reckoned to be good. Insofar as they approach to a right angle, they are reckoned to be in opposition and are called evil. Evil is simply that which is moving in the opposite direction to evolution. Evil is that which approaches the plane of movement of the ring chaos, and therefore tends to revert to the unmanifest. All evil that builds up with a universe is attracted toward the ring chaos and is self-destroyed, because the very name evil means a force which tends to non-existence. When evil is spelled backwards, it spells, when evil is spelled backwards, the word becomes live. And here we can see, and here we just read, all evil that builds up in the universe is attracted towards the ring chaos and is self-destroyed. Okay, it's just evil moves in the opposite direction of what we call life. Life is progressive, and evil would be considered devolution. Or let's just look at the list here. Ring chaos, diffusion, not growth, evil, death, darkness, matter, not being, devil, devolution, devolution, vacuum. Those labels and meanings register within our mind, and now we have concepts of how the ring chaos operates, along with how the ring cosmos also functions. And together, ring cosmos and ring chaos created our cosmos and maintains our cosmos. So you can conceive of evil under two aspects: that which enables you to lock up the forces of good by opposition, and so secure stability, a foothold. Evil enables you to get a purchase on space. Evil, if allowed to function unopened, excuse me. Evil, if allowed to function unopposed, is the scavenger of the gods. Therefore, said the Great One, our Master, resist not evil. Resist not evil. When you resist evil, you lock up good. You lock up the force of good, which holds the evil inert. This serves no useful purpose unless you have a superabundance of good, which shall stand upon the platform thus formed and leap up from it to greater heights. Therefore, it is not enough to meet hate with love, evil with good. This is the course of ignorant. This is the course of the ignorant, and the reason why exoteric religion has made so little impression in the world. You must hate with hate sufficiently to cause a locking up of the force. You must hate the hate, and having rendered evil inert by opposition, the love can take its stand upon the firm platform and use it as a thrust block. Does this make sense? Hate with hate. We don't go rescue based off skewed beliefs, and as the teacher mentioned here, the ignorant. We back away from hate if our intentions are to love. And let's keep reading because it's going to explain it why. This is where I myself and humanity, and there's a lot of noise because, yes, love is all of creation with life, but when we're talking about these concepts here, and we're trying to personalize them in a sense so that our mind can understand it. When it comes to principle, hate and hate needs to actually be together, not good and hate. Okay. We could probably think about throughout time and history over many years where evolution has built on top of World War II. Okay, there was a lot of hate energy that was locked up, but going through that experience as for humanity as a collective, we created that platform within time in order to thrust off of it, a firm platform, and that created a thrust block for evolution to continue. Right. It's hard to, this concept is interesting, and love takes its stand upon the firm platform and use it as a thrust block. Now, a lot of good has came out of what we perceive as bad during these wars in humanity. There's always been wars, and these platforms are being these planes within humanity's evolution have been created for our own growth, expansion of consciousness. But getting a little too personalized here, let's go back to the concepts that are being taught with the from the teacher of the cosmos, because we're trying to train the mind, not inform the mind. Then, beginning unopposed, it is free to follow the law of its own nature, which is to join the motion of the ring cosmos. Excuse me. To join the motion of the ring chaos. It therefore passes out to the periphery of the universe until it meets the spin of the ring pass knot, which it cannot get through. But it has gone to a place of such primitive simplicity that it is resolved into its own elements, and this and these elements are drawn into the attraction of the nearest motion, which is the nature of the ring cosmos, which is the nature of good. Can we see this now? So the prime evil locks itself up, sort of just rolls towards the ring pass knot, the limits of all of the cosmos is broken down to its nothingness, because that's what it's attempting to do. It's attempting to expand the circumference. It's looking to move away from the center, which is the ring cosmos. So we have these oppositions, and in between the prime evil and the prime good, we have life and creation and movement that has taken place. Okay. Therefore, evil, when unopposed, resolves itself into the undifferentiated raw material of existence. The first form of manifestation. It ceases to be organized. It ceases to have qualities. It starts afresh at the beginning, transmuted through neutrality into good. It is the spin of these two rings which give the influences that play upon creation. You are now in position to know why the mystery of evil is the secret of the initiates, because when you understand evil, it is exceedingly useful. But the undisciplined man, if he knew the usefulness of and goodness of evil, would use it dynamically on the pos would use it dynamically on the positive side of its manifestation, not statically by availing himself of its negative qualities, and does the initiate. So, in other words, in New Age spirituality, we don't chase the light. We need to actually go towards the darkness. There's this misconception of the light has won and darkness is bad. And so here we have this Blu-ray teacher. Expressing through Dion Fortune and attempting to train our mind to know that these concepts that we believed, where evil was bad and good is God and great, but if we're going to create to the degree where life flows through us at such a high degree, right? Then we can understand these principles, these universal principles, and that's how we train our mind. And then we refine our choices and how we shift our perspective and we expand our awareness and our consciousness. My note here, numbers equal degrees of angles. And here the teacher says, you see, it is a matter of geometry. That is why numbers are so important. And remember, numbers in occultism refer to the degrees of angles. The degrees of the numbers of white occultism are marked in the ring cosmos. The degrees of the numbers of evil are marked in the ring chaos. Always think of the number in referring to the degree of an angle of two intercepting lines of force. And remember that when you operate on more than one plane, you get the angles of the intersecting of the planes. You will have more instruction about that. Every plane has three rings, like the cosmos. Also, you can get intersections between different types of movement, like time and space. These things will be studied later. We can see a lot of these geometrical clues in astrology with the planetary relationships. The red lines we could actually consider evil because they're difficulties. They are working in opposition. Okay. Whereas the green, the trines and sextiles, that would be more ring cosmos, red lines, ring chaos. All right. So we're constantly working in degrees. And our attempt is to, when it comes to our creation and our manifestation, because we are manifestation and we are life and life is flowing through us, then we actually get to use our choice on how we want to approach each and every day when it comes to understanding these universal principles. All right. I quit sharing the screen. So, yeah, down here at the bottom, I made a little drawing where a few years ago I made this drawing. We can see I have negative polarity. Negative polarity in the center and positive polarity circled or surrounding the negative polarity. Okay, so just as a whirlpool in a water, which is a suction of vacuum, eventually that negative polarity will dissipate, and then the positive polarity just kind of floats in, because the negative polarity, as mentioned in the reading, will be attracted to outer space to broaden the circumference and touch the ring pass knot, broke down to its primal elements, and then circles back around, and then and then connects with the ring cosmos, positive polarity. So it's interesting how this works if we can visualize this. Okay. All right. Yeah, that'll be enough for today. These are some dense concepts and can be very difficult to talk about, but I enjoy reading again the Cosmic Doctrine, because it's always refreshing to revisit some of these universal principles and universal concepts. Okay.